Jay Fanning on 2FM.
Indeed. 10 minutes past the hour of 2 o'clock. We're here till 351552 is our text. Now, there's loads of huge movies hitting streaming services at the moment, as you well know, with the release of Blonde on Netflix, Hocus Pocus 2 on Disney Plus, and new seasons of The Crown to come later in the autumn. But how have the streamers, if I can call them that, changed what gets actually made? Comments by Matt Damon on changes in the industry have resurfaced recently, and writer and film critic for the Irish Times, Tara Brady, is here now to talk about whether streaming is changing what we actually kind of get the opportunity to see. So Tara, welcome back to the programme. First of all, Matt Damon's point, what was it?
Well, he's making a very specific point. This is a subject he's talked about before, in different guises, I suppose, about the disappearance of the mid-budget movie and so on from cinemas.
Yeah.
But it's specifically, he's talking about DVD and Blu-ray and the money that because obviously he's a producer as well as an actor, that used to be a fairly sizable little nest egg that you could rely on. It was a big part of your revenue, but technology has moved that on. He made a very, very specific example where he's talking about the Liberace biopic, which he produced and co-starred in. And he would say,
yeah, that was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah. Behind the Candelabra. And it's like, it's for all 10 purposes, that was a film that should, it had everything behind it. And you'd have to have said that maybe 20 years ago, it would have been a hit.
It had
stars in it. It had Michael Douglas. It had, you know, it had really good performances. You know, it had a kind of a, like, it had an interesting kind of a hook. It had a lot going for it. And it had a big Cannes premiere and it was out of competition, but you know, it had the splashiest possible red carpet and a big push up. But when he makes the point that when he went to talk to studio executives about it, they went, okay, if it's $25 million budget, then we need another $25 million for advertising costs, which I think is a very conservative estimate.
Right,
we all know that most of these things are, they get about $100 million spent on advertising.
Spielberg has always said that whatever I spend on a movie, it costs two times at least spend on advertising.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that brings to 50. Half of that goes to the exhibitors. So in practical terms, a film has to make $100 million before you can turn a profit. And like, if you're making a small movie, $100 million is not really a realistic option. And that is part of the reason, it's certainly part of the equation as to why mid-level movies are disappearing out of cinemas.
And how did it do behind the candelabra?
It was kind of a disaster. It made $13 million
in total. Is
it kind
of a disaster because of where it had to go in the first place?
Yeah, well, it's because that market has shrunk, but they also, like, they ended up doing a deal with HBO, so it ended up going pretty much straight to streaming, which is what's happening over and over.
If it had got the push that amount of money seems to think it might have got, I don't know if that was actually spent on it, would it have worked in the cinema if it was there for 3 months or 6 months?
Well, that is a question. I don't think so. I mean, would it have worked in the cinema if it was there for 3 months, 6 months? Yeah, maybe, because that's a much longer run, but nothing stays in the cinema for three months, six months anymore.
You know what I mean? Like, without talking to HBO for 6 months or whatever, that's what I mean.
I don't know, because cinema now is so geared towards what is absolutely guaranteed, and it's so geared towards what they call the four quadrant picture, which is all demographics. And they don't really want to make something that's for a niche audience. And then that effect is doubled down by the fact that the streamers are looking at niche audiences and algorithms.
Right, so niche audience is still being made, but not for the big screen.
Not for the big screen.
Okay, so haven't we had a million conversations about the death of cinema due to X, due to Y, due to Z? I mean, the big home cinema things, the big screens, that was supposed to kill it.
Yeah.
Everything is supposed to kill cinema, right?
Yeah.
The streaming question, is this a different one? And maybe COVID as well, throw the whole lot in, no?
Yeah, no, COVID definitely had an impact. And if anything, it exacerbated that trend that we've seen towards the big quadrant thing and the fact that they only want to make existing IP, they only want to make superhero movies. In terms, like, that's what the big studios want to stick with. That's what works, and that's what works in cinemas. You know, they'll make Mission Impossible, but you know, they're not going to take a chance on some kind of new franchise that nobody's.
Well, I mean, bluntly, if it works, it works.
Yeah,
what does works mean? Make money.
Yeah, works.
You see,
it works in this context. That's all it means.
Let's go back to those mid thingamabob movies you're talking about. Did they make money, those ones of the 80s and 90s that they just don't make anymore? For
they definitely.
So now the times have changed because of. Okay.
Yeah. Right. So what you see is that cinema isn't going anywhere. As we've said, how many times has that conversation come up?
I'm going to start it again. Are you sure?
Yeah, no, it's not going anywhere.
Quite sure.
No, yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm
not
pretty
so
confident
sure anymore.
In that.
I actually think that if anything is going to kill cinema, it's not half the things I used to think. I think it's actually what I would call bluntly box sets.
Yeah.
I think that's going to kill cinema.
I don't know. No, really? I still think that people, you wait and see when Avatar 2 comes out, like later this year, it'll make money.
Yeah, but that's not cinema. That's one movie.
Yeah.
Even like Marvel isn't cinema. That's just a bunch of movies. I mean,
yeah.
I'm just saying that like there's an awful lot of movies that used to have a packed cinema. I mean, I know like my family went to a bunch of cinemas this week and like I said, how many were there? Like 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, yeah. No,
and that was the Harry Potter, not the Harry Potter, the Harry Styles movie, whatever, Drop Dead Darling, or whatever it's called.
Drop Dead Darling might have been a much better film than it actually was.
Did you ever see that, Drop Dead Darling? It's about 40, 50 years old. It's actually very good. Sorry, where was I? Go on. Yeah.
That's a good question. Where were we? So
nothing's killing cinema.
No, I don't think anything's
right.
killing cinema.
Good.
I think those cinema is changing. And I think the kind of films that you see in cinema is a certain kind of picture, and the kind of films that are getting made for streaming is a certain kind of picture. And if you look at, you can certainly argue that something like Hocus Pocus 2, I mean, like for 30 years fans have been asking for a sequel for that. But it's only
something
really,
I didn't know when I said that at the beginning. Is that true, really? I haven't been asking for it.
No, I know. I wasn't the front of that queue either. But it has a huge kind of cult following online, and it is a big vocal fan base online. So they got their wish. But that, for example, would not have been worth Disney's while to put that in cinemas. But it is worth their while putting it on Disney Plus, where it's a can that they can put
but
back in the
shelf.
That's kind
of what I'm saying. That's where the audience is.
Yeah. It is.
Like
I've
been to the cinema twice in the last couple of weeks. I went to see the one with Matt Damon. Oh my God, I shouldn't have started this. Brad Pitt, the weird one that he's got out at the moment about on the train. The Bullet Train.
Yeah.
God, I thought it was awful. Like, there was nobody there. Okay, and then like I saw the David Bowie one, which is a different thing again. Anyway,
yeah.
Okay, so, and again, well, that was a different thing. Okay, so, nothing's killing cinema. Move
yes.
on. Okay, is there an argument that the rise of the streamers make it so that kind of local content gets a bigger shot? And that's a really important point.
Yeah, no, I know people who are there going, I'm cancelling my Netflix subscription because they're doing too much harm to cinema. And but at the same time, Netflix also have a huge like global operation, and they are investing in local industries.
Yeah.
Their British film wing has just like sort of kicked into action really in the last few months, and you're seeing that replicated all over the world. And then you have Roman Gavras's Athena, which dropped on Netflix last week.
That's a bit of a big screen thing,
which
isn't
is
it?
Absolutely tremendous. I mean, it's a sort of double-edged sword, because it's a film that really should be seen on the big screen. Like the focus puller deserves a medal. Like it just never stops. It's a completely relentless action film. But at the same time, you know, you can't really argue with the fact that suddenly, you know, 215 million people all over the world can press a button and see it. So like, you know, it makes it a much larger part of the conversation than most French language movies would ever be, on an ordinary theatrical release.
That's a very good point. All right, what about diversity of casting and all that. That's not a bad thing. There are positives there as well.
Yeah, no, there's definitely, and it's part, I suppose, of because Netflix and Disney Plus and all of the kind of big streamers, they're operating to an algorithm. So they're able to serve niche audiences in a way that cinema hasn't been doing for a really long time. So you get teenage content like sex education, and really like even in the TV sector before the streamers like really took off, adolescents were largely kind of ignored group. Like people weren't making sort of teen-oriented shows.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, stuff like Bridgerton, you see the colour-conscious casting that, you know, that's been in, like, say, the West End for years in the theatre set has, like, now migrated to TV. And
right.
It's now just
okay.
a kind of, it's now just a kind of given. But you also see, like, a lot of, you know, there is a very visible thing of big-name directors, like, including Martin Scorsese and Spike Lee and Jane Campion, where they're going and they're taking the Netflix money. And you can't blame them for doing that, because The Power of the Dog is a very good example of a mid-budget
film.
If
she wants to make a movie that's almost kind of not just mid-budget, but it's kind of an art house almost, well then there's the money. She can make it. She's happy.
Yeah, I think how many trucks full of money did they give Martin Scorsese for The Irishman? And I don't think any studio was going to be queuing up to do that.
Yeah. All the money went on making people look younger.
Yeah.
What was that weird thing they did? Have they done that since?
I think it's like you see see it sort of in small little sections, but I don't think anyone's ever attempted it on that scale.
Right. Okay. By the way, like also when I mentioned local, I don't know if Squid Game was ever local. Was
yeah.
it? I can call it local. That suddenly became global.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have become global maybe if it wasn't for TV.
No, definitely not. And they like, you know, even the merchandise they were able to sell on the back of that alone. So you can, yeah, there is potential there. And whatever arguments there are against the subscription services, you have to say, like, when they generate a hit, they can really generate a hit.
And are we talking about narrow casting in some ways? Like, you know, the streaming services are about a niche audience, aren't they?
But again, that does allow for kind of specific things in a way serving cults and serving different things that, you know, just aren't going to get served in other ways.
Yeah. So, like, we have gone from a situation where there were a couple of streamers and they each had some content from various studios, but now a fragmentation where each studio or each production house has their own streaming option. That becomes unsustainable, I would assume, eventually, unless basically you're a zillionaire and you can just keep throwing money at it until you're the only one left.
I think, like, you know, in the case of Amazon, that's just literally true. So, you know, there are people who are zillionaires and who can just throw money at it. You have to think that at some point something's going to give, and that they're going to have to amalgamate. There definitely are too many out there in the marketplace. And you can't think of something, the kind of smaller ones like Peacock. It's going to be very, very difficult for them to survive, I think, in the long run. And so, you know, there's going to be a degree of cannibalization going forward. Like, the kind of bigger ones are going to eat other things up. But I think that's one of the things that I think is really interesting, is like in the last year there's been a slight, I mean, the market's not coming back to the extent that Matt Damon was talking about, where you got like this big afterlife for a movie, and you got, like, you know, you got your second payday out of a movie from DVDs. But there is a slight upswing in the DVD market in the last year or so, or the last 2 years, and partly that's COVID related, but also it's because people are realising that, oh well, my favourite movie was on the streaming service, but there's no guarantee it's going to be on the streaming service next year or in 10 years time.
Yeah.
So if it's something you really love, you need to have the hard copy. So I think that has pushed sales up a little bit. Again, it gets this sort of a niche thing. It's not a big, like, kind of mass market in the way that it was, but certainly it's there. And, you know, we're all aware of, like, films that had a better life on DVD than they did as a film.
Oh.
Like Ratatouille was not one of Pixar's biggest films, but it's one in when it was in the cinema, but it's one of their biggest selling DVDs of all time.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it is pretty good.
Okay, just that thing about being a zillionaire. I mean, just before we were talking here, while the ad break was on, you mentioned something about being a fan of Liverpool. And, like, I just said, yeah, your man blew it. I mean, he cost 85 million. He headbutts a guy in 10 minutes, and then he loses the next four or five games. And look where they are now, halfway down the table. All that kind of thing. So the same kind of thing. I mean, you need to have so much money. You need to keep throwing money at it in order to survive. Is that what you're saying? What's Peacock, by the way?
That's the Paramount service. But
There's so many
services.
These things will go
there
because of the zillionaire money.
They'll go because ultimately these things will sort of monopolize. And we've seen that happen with the studios over recent years anyway, and the way that Disney has hoovered up Marvel and Star Wars and then 20th Century Fox. Yeah. So, like, you see things are slowly
evolving. And this hard copy business, do DVDs still sell?
In very small numbers, but they do. I suppose there's a knock-on effect of that, because they no longer sell in very large numbers. You can't just knock into a high street like place something like HMV or something like Tower. You can't just do that anymore because those places don't exist anymore as outlets. So then the knock-on effect is that you're forced to go back to Amazon and buy them there. So it's kind of this like cycle of them being sort of pushed out of the marketplace, but they are still there. There is definitely, the market is growing at a weirdly steady rate, albeit in very like small little movements.
So are we looking at a future where only guaranteed box office smashes like Marvel and all that stuff are going to kind of crowd out the mid-budget film?
Yeah, I mean, one of the examples I think Matt Damon looked at was like courtroom dramas, things like that. I mean, you're not going to find those. You're not going to find those anymore in cinemas. And I mean, there's an interesting thing.
Well, really weird. I watched a courtroom drama only last night, and I know that a lot of people wouldn't think it's that good. I really enjoyed it. Very old-fashioned movie. If you've seen it, it's on Netflix. It's called The Last Vermeer. about the paintings that were stolen. It's your man Klaus Bang, whatever his name is, from
Sisters.
And Guy Pearce is great in it. I really enjoyed it. It was great. But now, that kind of thing I love because I don't see too many courtroom dramas. I love courtroom dramas, and I haven't seen a courtroom drama in the cinema for 20 years.
Yeah, courtroom dramas are exactly the kind of thing that you will find on a streaming service, but you're not going to really find in cinemas going forward. And I think that it's interesting that, like, I think See How They Run, for example, hasn't really done the business in the cinema that maybe they were hoping. But you know, when a film like Knives
that's
Out...
That's one I saw in the cinema only the other week. Let me just think, See How They Run. Yeah, that's going to work on video. Yeah. On television.
Yeah, whereas a film like Knives Out and Knives Out 2 is on its way. Like, those kind of whodunits, like, sit on Netflix really well. Glass Onion. Even that. Yeah. So, yeah, like, they sit on Netflix really well. They're exactly the kind of thing that people want to see when they come home and hit a button. It's like, they just work
really
well.
Really weird. Knives Out, I saw in the cinema twice. I have no idea why I went a second time. Anyway, basically, what's going to happen? What's the future, Tara?
Liverpool are going to slowly climb the table.
Is there anything you can do to stop these Marvel movies?
Everything's cyclical, and you do have to think that at some point it'll have to come to some kind of end.
Yeah, I was saying 10 years ago.
During the 1980s and 90s, and you had those big muscular action movies with
Jean-Claude, Bruce
Willis, and everyone thought those would go on forever, and they didn't. There was a kind of logical cycle to it. So you have to think that the Marvel thing can't hang on forever. I mean, you know, they can only diversify it so much and, you know, make it in, but at some point you're asking to reinvent the wheel, and it's...
But they are hugely popular. I mean, I watched a little bit of Spider-Man, the recent Spider-Man with that younger guy, whatever his name is, gone out with Zendaya.
Yeah.
Whatever his name is, I can't remember. I know him by the girlfriend. But I watched about 10 minutes and I said, I can't. I just couldn't go any... Stop these movies, I say. They're getting in the way of good films and good cinema.
I think you're stuck with them.
Yeah, right, okay, for a while yet. All right, Tara, listen, anything you've seen lately that I should know about that's good?
Athena. Watch Athena on Netflix.
I was just going to say, yeah, it's good, is it?
It's absolutely fantastic. Right. It's really, really good. And the first 11 minutes are just the most exciting sequence of cinema I've seen in a long time.
And you're seeing the first 11 minutes saying, this should be in a cinema.
I did see it in the cinema, though, because I saw it in Venice.
Wow, okay, I walked into that one. Oh, yeah, did you see them? Did Colin get his award there? Were you there?
Yeah, I did. Well, yeah. Colin actually had already gone home when his award was handed out.
Oh, really?
So Martin McDonagh had to accept it on his behalf. That's a fantastic movie.
It's
going to do really well. I think it's Martin McDonagh's best film, Banshees of Inisherin.
Right. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, listen, thanks a million, Tara. Fair play to you. Tom Holland, I've just been told. Yeah. That's who I meant. Yeah. Okay. All right. Zendaya's boyfriend. All right. Good luck. Thanks a million, Tara. See you. Dave Fanning on 2FM.